Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Hunt in Magic City by T.R. Cameron, Michael Anderle, and Martha Carr. Narrated by Andrea Ems. Chapter 1. Bad thoughts bounced around Ruby Achera's brain as she hurtled along the desert highway, seeking relief. Highway? Hell. Two lanes, imperfectly paved, twisting and turning at random is not my definition of a highway. The motorcycle purred beneath her as she wound through the turns, barely enough of her intellectual capacity devoted to the process to keep her on the road. The rest of it battled the insidious mental messages the artifact in her left forearm pummeled her with. She'd won the initial battle and had presumed the ones to come would be less fierce, or at least less constant. Instead, every time her mind wandered, the Atlantean magic sought to increase its influence upon her. Those murmurings had pushed her out of bed at 2 in the morning, sent her straight to the motorcycle and out onto the road. The full black helmet completely obscured her features, the anonymity giving her a sense of freedom. Her black leather uniform top hid the tattoo that was the external proof of the artifact's existence. On its own, the bottom layer of her costume was generic enough not to connect to her identity as Magic City's defender, and the tunic and trousers offered the best protection possible against any sort of damage short of a full suit of body armor. Her high boots laced halfway up her calves, and thin riding gloves covered her hands to protect them from the whipping sand. She carried fewer weapons than usual, because Ruby Achera, allegedly adopted scion of the family who owned Spirit's Casino on the Eli Strip, wouldn't have a good reason to lug them around. The artifact mocked her for all the identities she possessed, and she growled and accelerated. The Arc One leapt underneath her like an eager horse and sped forward. Although as a mist elf she could always turn to her magic, she still hadn't been comfortable leaving all of her offensive tools behind. A document tube strapped diagonally across her back concealed her sword, as yet unnamed, and the pair of personalities it contained. She had turned to them more than once to help her fight off the artifact's influence, but even that had become more of a chore than a relief. This moment, flying along the highway in the dark, under the stars, alone in the middle of nowhere, was decidedly not a chore. It gave her a sense of liberation, something she hadn't felt too often since her return to Magic City. Out here, she could even portion off a part of her thoughts to consider the future, about the techno-magical items she might create, about where her relationship with Demetrius could go, about fulfilling her destiny on the other planet. A low chuckle rumbled through her mind.
Indeed. Once you have amassed all that power, then I will take you as my own.
Shut the hell up, you scummy bastard. She'd turned insulting the artifact into a stupid game that nonetheless amused her, and her names for it ranged from the most sophisticated insults to the basest epithets. She stiffened slightly as her phone vibrated in her pocket, but she didn't dare take her focus off the highway to see who sought her attention. You definitely don't text and drive when you're on a motorcycle, not if you want to be alive at the end of the ride. A notice at the side of the road proclaimed Charon, Nevada, a mile ahead. The sign was as dilapidated as the town it heralded, a remnant of a time left behind by the modern world. She'd been through the area several times before on rides similar to this one, though not with the artifact murmuring in her head, and not quite so late at night. It was a crossroads with an old filling station, now shut down, a 4-unit motel that had probably been dismal in its prime, but was currently clearly vacant and boarded up, and what had been a diner, a squat building that had mostly fallen in upon itself. That reminds me, we still need to clear that second escape tunnel from the bunker. They'd discovered the passage ended beneath a collapsed building, and Margrave assured her it would be easy enough to build up a protective structure, not visible from the outside, to permit its use. The voice in her head offered no comment on that particular plan, and she sighed in relief. She came around a bend and spotted the gas station ahead to her right, opposite the diner on her left. The once motel held a position on the diagonal from the gas station across the intersection. A glint caught her eye from a place where a glimmer shouldn't be, the roof of the squat building that serviced the fuel pumps. It preceded the sound by only an instant, the report of a rifle loud and echoing in the empty desert. Guess there's no need for a silencer out here, her brain supplied unhelpfully. The bike jerked and flipped, sending her hurtling through the air. Front tire hit, her mind offered, again with no particular benefit. Her reflexive force shield, which had saved her when the bar at the mist had exploded in her face to welcome her back to town, was already forming around her. She automatically calculated angles and trajectory, allowing the protective cocoon to solidify before using more force magic to cushion her landing and keep her from scraping her way across the road. Feedback from the impact and continued motion transmitted through the shield as a sensation similar to pain, but nothing like the real damage and agony the accident would have caused. She wobbled up to her feet, shivering with adrenaline. The involuntary meeting with the ground had spiderwebbed her faceplate, and she pulled off the helmet and dropped it to the pavement. She'd landed more or less in the middle of the intersection before sliding through it. Motion drew her eye as the three figures advancing toward her, one from the diner, one from the gas station, and one from the hotel. The third was the nearest, so she charged that one. The figure was human, a woman, and raised a rifle in response to her rush. It spat bullets out at her in a stream, and Ruby slashed her hand across on a diagonal, creating an angled shield to intercept and deflect them. No way they've got anti-magic rounds. If they were that competent, they wouldn't have missed me and hit the bike in the first place. She didn't make the mistake of assuming they were amateurs. Probably they were very good at what they did, but no one would send their most expensive team against Ruby Achara. There would be no reason, since as far as the world knew, she was the dilettante adopted human daughter of wealthy parents. Entrepreneur. Innovator. The words she'd used with her family in jest filtered through her mind randomly. Ruby snarled. Okay, wench, innovate this. At a distance of 10 feet, she sent a large force wave at the other woman, throwing her backward toward the motel. Ruby continued running, feeling the presence of the rest of the enemy team. If she stopped, they'd be in range in an instant. As it was, handgun rounds splatted near her, but none connected. Even if they had, her personal shield, which lay a couple of inches away from her skin, would have dealt with them handily. As long as they aren't super heavy caliber, that is. The things she'd read suggested that a big enough bullet could deliver sufficient kinetic energy even through a shield to take her out of the fight, and without anyone around to help her, that would likely be fatal. The woman pushed herself to her feet, with her back pressed against a plywood panel, covering the entrance to one of the middle units for support. Ruby strengthened her shield, pumped some magic into her muscles to increase her speed and strength, and slammed into her foe, leading with her shoulder. In the instant before impact, her opponent's eyes widened, and she tried to bring the rifle up towards Ruby's face. It got caught between their bodies as the collision blasted the woman back through the plywood, sending both of them tumbling into the room. Dust and the scent of sour mold filled her senses, and she gagged before launching another force wave outward to clear the air of nearby particles. The plaster in the ceiling cracked, the walls creaked, and moving things on the floor scuttled further away. The woman under her groaned weakly, and Ruby lifted far enough to whip an elbow into the woman's head, knocking her out at a minimum. It wasn't time for niceties, not with at least two more on the way, and probably a third given the rifle shot. A four-member team made sense. Guess the only question is whether the rifle person will stay on watch in case I try to escape. 50-50 chance. The others were doubtless approaching the motel at that very second, hopefully with enough caution to slow them a little. Ruby called up a small ball of light in her left hand and used it to examine the woman, finding what she was looking for after only a couple of moments. The radio was a military knockoff, often adopted by private security. Also by whoever these guys are. Wonder if they're from Aces. I wouldn't be surprised if those bastards were behind this. Still, why would they care about Ruby Achara? Those thoughts cascaded through her mind unproductively as she liberated the radio and tucked the earpiece into her ear. No sound was present at the moment, which she attributed to good discipline. If she'd been dealing with amateurs, she would have expected conversation. Professionals only talked when they needed to. She checked the room, staying low and extending the light around, and discovered connecting doors to both sides. A window looked out onto an expanse of dirt and scrub in the back, and the notion of slipping under a veil and escaping was immediately appealing. She wasn't going to do that for a bunch of reasons. First, she wanted to know why these people had targeted her in particular. Second, she needed to know how they'd found her riding in the desert in the middle of the night. Third, and perhaps most importantly, she had to see if they had any link to Ace's security or any of the other logical connections in town that Gabriel Sloan might have contracted before his death. Because if he left instructions behind when he shuffled off to the afterlife, that could be bad. Really bad. She stood and moved toward the connecting door that led to the next unit over, the other occupying the center of the building. Fourth, you scumbags wrecked my beautiful bike. Somebody's going to pay for that. Chapter 2. The room on the opposite side of the door was as wrecked as the one she'd left. A small nightstand was disintegrating beside a bed with a half-broken frame. This chamber looked like it might have hosted a party at some point, to judge by the beer cans scattered around. The open door threw moonlight into the space, illuminating the most important feature of the room. A man dressed in the same black fatigues as the woman she'd defeated, raising an identical rifle. Ruby said, "No, I don't think so." The statement held no warmth or amusement. Fury battered at her mental defenses with the taste of the artifact's influence underlying it. She reached out with her force magic and grabbed the weapon, yanking her arm back to hurl it across the chamber. The man slapped the release catch so he didn't go with it, unfortunately, and drew the pair of pistols holstered at his thighs. Ruby shook her head. "I said no." She thrust out her palms and blasted each weapon with a bolt of force, knocking them away. "Here's the deal, scumbag. You and your friends have made a huge bloody mistake. Now you're going to tell me everything you know about what brought you here and how you found me, or I'll break each bone in your body until I do, starting with these." She reached out her hand and squeezed, imagining a fist gathering around his fingers, curling them inward. His bones snapped with a series of audible pops. Dark elation surged inside her, and she pushed it away with a growl. "I'm in charge, you bastard!" The Atlantean's laughter rippled in her skull. She strode forward unhurriedly, and he backed toward the room's exit, cradling his crushed appendage. A sharp gesture summoned a wall of force to block the doorway he'd entered through and continued her advance. He growled something obscene and drew a knife with his functional hand. Ruby shook her head again. "Okay, you don't seem to get it, so take your shot." She spread her arms wide, and he darted in and stabbed the blade at her chest. Her left arm whipped around in a block, intercepting the point and causing it to scrape on her shield as she pushed it harmlessly away. "I cut that one a little too close." Sure, it's unlikely he'd have an anti-magic weapon, but it was still a dumbass move. She circled her right hand underneath and grabbed his wrist, then gave it a subtle twist and yanked to pull him forward. His shins banged off the bed, and he went down, the remaining structure collapsing beneath him and puffing out another cloud of dust, and who knew what else. She pushed the particles away from herself with magic while he coughed and gagged. When he'd recovered enough to roll over and glare at her, she said, "Want to live? Tell me something about what brought you here." His voice was harsh, raspy, almost inaudible, despite his effort to push words out of his throat.
"Wrong information, apparently. We were targeting a human."
He broke into a wave of coughing. "Well, I can't let you report back now. I bet Diana and her team have somewhere you can cool your heels for a while." The earpiece crackled with the words, "Delta, Delta, Delta," and the man's eyes widened. His body lurched reflexively toward the door, and she instantly realized that whatever the code meant, he didn't want to be in the motel when it happened. Therefore, neither did she. She raced for the doorway, summoning an additional shield over the one that coated her body. A whistling sound signaled the arrival of something that slammed into and through the plywood covering the window. The room behind her exploded, sending her hurtling forward in a tumble. The initial sound repeated as another munition landed, and the noise of the motel collapsing in on itself joined. Not much loyalty from your comrades. She rolled to her feet and located the gas station building, calling up a double-strength shield facing in that direction and dashing in a diagonal to the right away from it. Where's contestant number three? Come out wherever you are. The sniper reaffirmed their presence as a bullet slammed into her shield at head level. Thank heaven they didn't bring anti-magic. Probably trusting the element of surprise and the fact that their target wasn't a magical. Huh. For once, my parents' decision to hide my identity pays off. She spotted the team's third member and shifted her path toward the man, who was pulling the trigger on a grenade launcher of some kind, to judge by the canister shooting from the barrel at high speed. She'd never seen a weapon like it before. Her first thought was that maybe it shot rockets instead of grenades, but she knew exactly how to deal with it either way. She swung her hand in a slap toward the motel, and the projectile veered off in that direction. It hit and exploded, adding to the conflagration. She drew too close for him to use that weapon again, so he went for the pistol at his hip. It looked larger than usual, so she expended more energy to toughen up her shields. The sniper's bullet that struck the barrier guarding the back of her head had ample force to pitch her forward, and the round from the pistol smashed into her shin hard enough to send her tumbling. Her shields were great at protecting against penetration and at generally dissipating impacts, but those two rounds in quick succession hit it hard. Ruby somersaulted and returned to her feet to find her quarry running away. "Oh, no, you don't," she growled and reached for her power to throw out a line. Instead of her dominant right arm moving forward, her left arm did. The tattoo burned, and she guessed what was about to happen. A line of shadow magic reached out and wrapped itself around his feet. She reflexively yanked backward to drop him on his face, then slowed to a walk as she turned her attention inward. "You're not the boss of me." She pictured the Atlantean as his familiar laugh rang in her head.
"Is that so? Perhaps not yet, but soon, very soon."
Her foe in the real world stood, and Ruby punched him in the face, reinforcing the blow with force magic. He went down again unconscious. She grabbed him by the collar and started dragging him toward the back of the motel, looking for some place to get him out of the way so she could deal with the last member of the team. The long gun barked, and the figure in her hand jerked. She looked down to see that the sniper had killed him, a clean shot to the heart that was spilling blood all over his chest. She dropped the body with a sigh and cursed. "Okay, scumbag, let's do this." She spared a portion of her magic to call up a veil, then let every shield other than the one running along her skin drop. Her abilities only allowed her to keep so many spells going at once, and the next would require some power. She ran to the back of the motel, then launched herself up and over it at the midpoint, flying through the air toward the sniper's likely position. From above, she got a clear view of a figure in black fatigues striding along the edge of the gas station roof with a rifle pointed at the motel, slowly panning the scope to spot her emergence. It was doubtful the sniper would wait for long, but Ruby didn't need that much time. Before she hit the ground, she launched herself again, the distance requiring a second burst of force magic to get her there. She landed on the dusty surface behind the figure, who spun at the noise, whipping out a pistol. The sniper fired it automatically, almost without looking. The rounds smacked into Ruby's chest and stomach, but didn't penetrate, thanks to her magic. She let the veil fall and simultaneously blasted the weapon away from the sniper, who turned out to be female. The other woman tried to wrench the heavy rifle around, and Ruby grabbed it with her force magic and yanked it aside to clatter on the roof. The resolve in her foe's eyes was clear, and Ruby shook her head. "Nope." She whipped out a line of force from her right arm, carefully ensuring the artifact didn't influence her choice again and pulled the woman back from the edge she was about to throw herself over. You would have barely gotten injured, much less killed. If there's going to be pain involved, I'd far prefer to be the one to supply it. She wrapped more force magic around her captive to keep her contained, reached down, and ripped out her earpiece. The woman struggled, cursed, and threatened, but Ruby paid no attention. She walked far enough away to be out of earshot and dialed a number on her phone, noting absently that the earlier alert had been a text from him. Demetrius answered,
"Hey, Ruby, what's up? Awful late for you to be awake and not here."
The flirting drew a grin, even in the present circumstance. She replied,
"Yeah, believe me, I'd much rather be there.
Got some trouble. I need you to contact our government friends and tell them I have someone I'd like them to keep an eye on for me."
"I'll do it right now. Hold on."
Ruby walked over to the woman. "Don't fret. You'll probably live through this experience. Still, I can't have you reporting back to whoever sent you, so I'm afraid you're going to take a little vacation. I'm sure the facilities are nice." Demetrius came back on the line.
"I gave them your location. They'll open a portal to you soon."
"Excellent. Listen, someone came after me, and I'm not sure how they found me. It's possible it was my bike, since there probably aren't too many ARC-1s around here, but I don't feel like I've ridden it in public. My bigger concern is that they might have tracked me from the house. Make sure all the defenses are okay."
"Wait one."
He was gone for 15 seconds, then reported,
"Nothing to see here. No problems."
Ruby breathed a sigh of relief.
"Great. Perfect. Listen, do a full diagnostic or whatever you do to verify nobody messed with the stuff and lock all the doors. Then order me a bunch more drones. As soon as I have a free moment, I'll increase the house's surveillance and defense capability."
"Should I be worried?"
"I don't think so. You should be smart. You know, if you can stretch yourself to reach that lofty goal."
He coughed out the word "loser" under his breath.
"Ha, you owe me. I expect a real date for all the ongoing nonsense you put me through."
He broke through the worries that crowded her mind. She laughed.
"You got it. I know just the place. As soon as I get a few things under control, we'll do it up big."
Chapter 3. Juliana Sloane finished touching up her mascara and rose from the ivory and gold vanity in her dressing area. In the time since her husband's death, she'd progressed through the stages of grief quickly but intensely.
"If I have a memoir one day, that would probably be a good title."
Her life had always been fast and furious, and she usually came out the other side victorious,
as I intend to do on this occasion as well.
She smoothed the jacket that matched her gray pinstripe pants, the low black heels underneath a perfect complementary shade. Her red blouse was the only splash of color, and she felt it was appropriate given the vengeance taken at her orders the night before. She walked down the small hallway that led to the living room, which she'd altered since her husband's death. The white furniture was out, replaced by black versions that were more modern and less luxurious.
More me.
Still, it felt strange being there without him. For all that people saw her as a trophy wife, theirs had been a true partnership filled with real love. She shrugged inwardly.
Now I'm on my own again. Certainly not a situation I'm stranger to.
Juliana gave the man in the living room a thin smile.
"Smith, good to see you."
He had taken his usual pride in his appearance, his flat top perfectly even, the suit well-pressed.
"Any changes to the schedule?"
His tones were lower and more respectful than they'd been toward her when she was only the nightmare's wife.
"No, all is as expected. Thompson is on her way up."
That brought a genuine smile to Juliana's lips. The newest member of her security's leadership was someone she'd long favored, but her husband hadn't been as gender neutral as she was.
Or maybe he simply didn't recognize her talents. In any case, I do.
She was the alternate version of Smith. One or the other of them was with her during most of her waking time, or at least on call if she was somewhere safe like the penthouse. Juliana sat on the couch, and room service immediately bustled in. The uniformed waiter set a silver coffee pot and three heavy mugs on the table,
along with a dish filled with a variety of cookies and berries. She nibbled on one of the latter while Smith poured coffee for the three of them. Her newest lieutenant strode in, dressed in the standard security uniform of dark suit and black mock turtleneck. Her shoes were utilitarian, but had a professional shine. A tight ponytail corralled her hair, giving her a sleek, no-nonsense look. Both the locks and her skin were a deep chestnut. Juliana said, "Good morning." "How you doing, boss?" The other woman's informality was one of the most appealing things about her. "Ready for the news?" "Let me have it." 5 out of the 8 teams we sent were able to act on their targets. Results are 1 killed and 3 wounded. 1 escaped since we received the initial notification of contact, but nothing from the team after. Juliana frowned. "Who did we kill?" "The eldest of the Carruthers." "That's a pretty big family. Multi-generational, if I remember right. No immediate change will occur as a result. Who escaped?" Thompson had the information ready. No need to unclasp her hands from behind her back to go for a device to look it up. "The Mistel family that's still in town. Achara, eldest daughter." "The human?" Juliana had gone over all the dossiers beforehand and had familiarized herself with the potential targets. Her security both nodded. Smith interjected.
"Yeah, her. The adopted one. Should have been easy, but apparently not."
Juliana shook her head. 50% success isn't a level I'm satisfied with. We need to do better. Include the surviving teams in the next set of operations, since a shot at redemption might help motivate them. What did we learn from this experiment?" Thompson replied, "The targets generally have good protection. Probably they increased it after Goryeo did his thing." A nod urged her to continue. "We can guess they'll look for more security after last night, which will make the next phase somewhat more challenging." Juliana waved her hand airily. "Part of the plan, all part of the plan. So, Smith, introduce Thompson to our security company principals. They are to start aggressively moving to absorb or eliminate their competition. When the casino owners in Ely contract new security, I want to be sure our people are part of whoever they choose. If it turns out they're not up to it, make a deal with a different company and offer them up as a sacrifice. Either way, we need to be on the inside when the ball gets rolling." Smith replied, "Will do." He sounded eager to cause trouble for the two locals. "Good. What else did we learn?" Thompson replied, "Striking from a distance was effective in all 4 cases. 2x the snipers were adequate on their own, hitting the target with their first shot. In the other cases, the initial bullet was enough to give the team the opportunity to move in and do some damage before the defenders rallied. It's possible they'll be on guard against the snipers now, too. Certainly we should expect them to have more than 1 or 2 security guards with them." Juliana shrugged and sipped her coffee, which was dark, rich, and bitter. She winced and dropped a single cube of sugar into it, poking at it with a long fingernail until it dissolved. Then she replied, "So, change it up. I trust you to figure it out. What's essential is that when an opportunity presents itself, we're ready to hit it like a bolt of lightning from a cloudless sky. The more we thin out those families, the more likely they'll sell or get out of town. Speaking of which, what's the situation inside the casinos themselves?" Smith replied, "We've had teams visiting each of them every day. Heavily increased security. Looks like some new detection equipment at the entrances. Both magicals and humans in uniform keeping an eye on things. Doubtless they have a bunch in plain clothes as well. It's unlikely we'll be able to get in undetected." Juliana laughed. "That's probably what the pointy ears who owned the mist thought, too. Right up until the moment it crashed down like a poorly stacked house of cards. I heard they ran back to their planet." Thompson confirmed it. "Yep, the property is now in the hands of a trust. Our lawyers are working to see if there's a way to get at it, but it looks as if the documents were all written specifically to preclude an outside interest." "Good choice on the family's part, anyway. They probably figured I'd have them killed to acquire the land, And they certainly weren't wrong. She took another drink of her coffee.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?